All right, it's Monday. It's Black Monday. The list of NFL coaches fired up to 5. The number of general managers canned is 2. And once again, the Bill Belichick tree continues to have a bunch of questions. It's the fan drive time. It's Arash Madani, Stephen Brunt. Ben Ennis has the week off, so it's Brent Madani taking you through the week and into the first week of the NFL playoffs. Mr. Brunt, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir. Yes, it's that happy time of year. The football, yes. Football, and more football.
And more football, and expanded playoffs football, and Monday night football next week. Of course, the national championship game tonight to Alabama-Georgia. And it's amazing that it's going to be New England and Buffalo again in prime time, under the lights, in bad weather. They're going to get at it. And it's funny, right around this time yesterday, so many of us were wondering, what if? What if in the aftermath of the Colts, a 3-score favorite to Jacksonville, what if there's a tie? And, you know, 5 minutes to go in the Sunday nighter, and it's a 15-point Raiders lead. You're saying to yourself, okay, well, Vegas always wins, literally and figuratively. This can't happen until it almost did. That, you know, if you followed on social media last night, that could have been the most disaster. And nobody's shedding any tears for the bookmakers and the sports books and the casinos. Steve, they were on the verge of being absolutely shattered last night because there was considerable action on the tie. The tie that would have paid around 56 or 60 to 1, depending on when you got it and where you got it, because after exchanging field goals, the Raiders weren't in range to kick to win this thing. And of course, both teams would have gotten in with a tie. All hell would have broken loose if Vegas took one more knee last night.
Yeah, which would have been just fine. Yeah, right.
It would have been wonderful. Chaos.
Well, and if people, you know, you parlayed the tie with the Indy loss to Jacksonville, right? So that's the super sweet spot where you're going to, you know, parlay the impossible, the two impossible outcomes. And a whole lot of people were sitting, well, not a whole lot of people, but a few people were going to make a lot of money. The last, what do you say, like the last quarter plus, half a quarter plus overtime of that game was nuts. Like, I come away from this entire weekend wondering if anybody in the league is really any good. You know, tell me who the great team is this year. I think every team in the playoffs is vulnerable. And, you know, I think this weekend kind of confirmed it. But, I'm like a lot of people, Arash. I'm rerunning what I saw late last night and trying to make some sense of it.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, it's in Vegas, so first of all, we can make all our gambling analogies. It was amazing the run that the Chargers went on just to get to overtime. The sequence of events that had to happen were just nuts. I was about to call them San Diego. L.A., still weird to call them that. Justin Herbert and company convert on 6 consecutive fourth downs to put themselves in that spot. The game-tying touchdown comes with no time left in regulation. The Raiders had that game won. It was over. It was finished. And over again. Then there came a phantom defensive holding call. And then there's Herbert on 4th and a bunch converting. And then a receiver was ruled short on the field, but he turned his body and the ball had gotten to the 12-yard line. So there they were. We were treated to 2 terrific ball games yesterday. San Fran and the Rams, and then the Chargers and the Raiders, which now sets up maybe the wildest of wild card weekends. And we're going to talk to Tim Graham coming up out of Buffalo about this. I look at all these games, Steve. The Bengals are intriguing. They get one of the hottest teams in football. I mean, think about this. The Raiders, 4 weeks ago, were 6-7. Baltimore, 5 weeks ago, was 8-4. And now the Ravens are out and Vegas is in. Go figure.
Well, in Baltimore, what? How many games did they lose in the last second or the last possession or the last quarter, right? Like almost all of them, right? But so Baltimore, one after another, lost those games. Look, I guess, you know, it's a shame Justin Herbert's not going to be in the playoffs because I'd rather watch him than Ben Roethlisberger, the ghost of Ben Roethlisberger. Like, it's
the corpse it's one more of Ben time. Roethlisberger.
Yeah, and that's they're not going to, again, famous last words because it's a weird year, but they're not going to beat Kansas City. He can't throw the ball downfield. They're way too limited. Whereas Justin Herbert against Buffalo, which was the matchup we were looking at, like, you know, barring a blizzard rash, that's a pretty interesting football game. It's he's special. Now the problem is the rest of that team isn't so special. Their run defense especially isn't special, right? Which is kind of, you know, you get into all the conspiracy theories about what happened at the end and the time, whether they should have called the timeout or they couldn't stop, you know, they the same team that gave up on a 3rd and 23 on a draw play. Allowed the Raiders to convert that the last run in the game when they were handing the ball off when it was a long, long field goal attempt otherwise after the timeout and the guy ran for 10 yards, you know, essentially on an off tackle play. Like, defend the run and it's a tie and you're in the playoffs. Never timeout or no timeout. But I still think, I just think Justin Herbert's, I'd love to have seen him go into Orchard Park next week and see what that turned into. But man, yeah, what a bizarre. It's funny when I looked at the schedule originally for Week 18. Kind of thought, there's a winner, winning your in game on the Sunday night. That's kind of cool. But the rest of it, well, because Indy's going to beat Jacksonville, right? So the rest of it's all just going to fall into place. And there's a bunch of these games are going to be a moot point. You know, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, that's not going to mean anything because Indy's going to win. And then, then things got weird and stayed weird right up until, midnight.
And then this morning, the inevitable happened, Black Monday. Four more coaches joined Urban Meyer on the unemployment line. And you talked about Justin Herbert, Steve. You know, the Chargers drafted Justin Herbert. Miami passed on Herbert to go with Tua. Mm-hmm. Brian Flores is on the street. Chicago went with Mitch Trubisky ahead of Patrick Mahomes. Well, now Nagy's on the street. My Vikings decided to throw all the money in the world at that idiot Kirk Cousins. He of one career playoff win, 7-26 as a Viking against teams with a winning record. Mike Zimmer's on the street. And in Denver, the Broncos just never had a quarterback. It wasn't going to be Drew Locke, and it wasn't going to be Paxton Lynch, and Teddy Bridgewater got hurt. And last year, remember the debacle when the entire quarterback room came down with COVID and a practice roster receiver had to start a quarterback? Yeah, so Vic Fangio is on the street. And you look at those four scenarios, and of course there's more to it than meets the eye, and Tua may turn into a decent quarterback, who knows? But it really is wild just how quarterback play is the difference between any kind of franchise stability, any kind of continuity in your front office and coaching staff, and an absolute blowing up of the state of affairs.
Well, it's the one counter argument would be, the Titans with Ryan Tannehill, right, who is a merely adequate quarterback, and they're the number one seed of the AFC. So they're the exception that proves the rule. But otherwise, it's not just, Denver hasn't had a quarterback since Peyton Manning. And Peyton Manning was hanging by a thread when he was there. So you can argue in a lot of ways that as an organization, they haven't really had a quarterback since John Elway. Like they haven't, and it's astounding the number of guys. So you're right, like if you saddle a coach with the wrong guy and say make this work, again, look what the Jets are going through, an organization like that, like is every everybody else, every coach that they've hired been incompetent, or have they been trying to win games with quarterbacks who are not NFL quarterbacks? The drafting and developing of quarterbacks is I'm trying to think who we had on the show with not that long ago. I think we talked about with Amy Trask about why teams miss. Why are there so many misses at in the first half of the first round on quarterbacks. Why do some of these guys plateau? Why do they not? You know, before they even plateau, why did some of them not make it all? Why do you have Josh Rosen's and guys like that? Not to single him out because he's not the only one, but you know what happens? They've got the combine, they've got all of the greatest scouting minds and sports science minds in the world on this. There's so much at stake, and yet so many times, Arash, organization after organization gets it wrong. And you're right, the coach sometimes is the victim of it. Again, I'm not going to make a case for necessarily any of those guys that got fired. I think they're like none of them are as bad as Urban Meyer, but I think in each of those places you can make the case that it's time to change the voice in the room. But yeah, my God, if you're if you're front office, if you end up saddled with a guy where you've spent a tremendous amount of draft capital on him, and your job is to develop him and win with him, and by the way, do it fast, right? Like he better be the real deal by the time he's in starting season two, and maybe cases he better be playing in season one.
Look at this. There are six NFL playoff games coming up next weekend. Three of the quarterbacks in these six games were once upon a time the number one overall pick of the draft,
mm-hmm.
with Kyler Murray and Matthew Stafford and Joe Burrow. One of them's Tom Brady. Then you look around, Josh Allen in Buffalo, Mac Jones in New England, they were both first-round picks. Ben Roethlisberger, a million years ago, a first-round pick. Patrick Mahomes, a first-round pick. Jimmy G was almost a first-round pick. I mean, you have to nail your first-round pick, or you are setting your franchise back at least 4 or 5 years, at least. And when you look at it, Chicago did exactly that by missing on Trubisky. Minnesota missed on that in free agency. Miami, by the time Tua got in there, it was too late, and Denver mm-hmm. just didn't have their guy.
I was just going to say, Rash, you mentioned like Marcus Mariota, right? Number is mm-hmm. now the short yardage quarterback for the Raiders. There's
number two overall pick.
Yeah, he and Jameis Winston were 1 and 1A that year. Jameis Winston, may never pan out, probably won't ever pan out, and Marcus Mariota is your short yardage specialist. What does that tell you about the art and science of drafting a quarterback high? If you're going to have that conversation, a tip of the cap to the Buffalo Bills, and I know, again, not a finished product, they're not there yet, but they appear to have got their guy.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Allen, again, we'll be hosting a playoff game this weekend. They welcome in the Patriots. That actually, I am quite looking forward to that one on Saturday night. What a weird season for the Bills. They started off on fire. They beat Kansas City in October. It looked like the Bills were the team to beat in the AFC. Then Allen slips at the goal line against Tennessee midway through the season, and then they went into that swoon. And, they recovered and suddenly don't look now, but the Buffalo Bills are back-to-back AFC East champions. I don't know what that means. As I mentioned, Tim Graham's going to join us a little bit to talk more about the Bills. It felt like they were for real by the end of the playoffs last year. It appeared that they were in that walk-before-you-run mode to be among the AFC elite. Buffalo was one of the chic picks coming into the season. So I want to dig a little deeper in on the Bills. Steve, I know we're going to be talking a lot about football today, but I want to talk about Fred VanVleet. Mm-hmm. Just before we came on the air, he was named the Eastern Conference Player of the Week. Yeah, of course. What a week it's been. The Raptors have now, relatively quietly, they've won 6 in a row. They have not lost in this calendar year, small sample size. They have done it on back-to-backs. Now, granted, Milwaukee was without Giannis, but they won it on a back-to-back on the road. Able to win 3 games in 4 or 5 nights, 4 games in 5 nights. I'm really... Now, look, it's a tough little stretch coming up. Phoenix, mm-hmm. Milwaukee, Dallas await over the next 10 days. But I'm really starting to find this Raptors team is fun to watch. And it's been a while since I've said that. I think the last time I felt that about the Raptors was just before the first shutdown when the world came apart in March of 2020. Like, this has been a while. It's been almost 2 years since the Raptors have become a real, watchable, fun entertainment product. And Fred's part of it, but it feels like he is driving the bus and a bunch of others are jumping on board to see what this thing can be.
Yeah, I think he's more than a part of it. You know, like he's 40 minutes a night. Imagine what this conversation is if Fred VanVleet twists his ankle. Then it's a very different conversation, right?
Because he's the engine of this thing.
100%. And it's great, and it's a great story. And they do, you know, they have rounded, they have turned into a kind of a, well, they're, you know, winning, not just winning the games that they should win, but, you know, kind of picking off, you know, yeah, you do when you get Milwaukee and they decide to sit Giannis out and you pick them off and you get that win. They're picking off wins at times when they're, you know, opportunistic, which you have to do in the NBA if you're a team like them, if you're kind of a middle of the pack team or a little bit less than that. You have to grab those wins when you can. And I think, you know, it's funny. We went heading into this year, Rash. Now, you're right. The last, from the bubble on, it has been pretty hard to watch. The Tampa season was hard to watch. There was a sense of, you know, and a real kind of sense of where are they going to go? What are they, you know, the Lowry deal gets made, but, you know, do you have the components here? Do you tear down? Do you build up? What are they? Like the first 2 months, 3 months of the season, 2 months of the season, the only conversation we had around here was, you know, what are they? Are you trying to add and take a shot here? Are they a playoff team? Are they a lottery team? Are they a play-in team? And this, during this stretch, and again, you know, you are still relying on one guy playing 40 minutes a night and playing his heart out every night, which is a tricky formula. And, you know, and there are going to be depth issues, and there are going to be, and there's still, you know, maybe they're not as kind of locked down a defensive team as you would like, but right now they're a playoff team. They're not a play-in team. They're not in that absolute elite tier at the top of the conference, but they're not, you know, they're just below it. Right. And I think that's kind of a best case scenario. It does, you know, it does kind of present some interesting questions as they head towards the trade deadline about how far do you want to go here? But, you know, and I'll tell you, they have, and I, you know, this has been kind of a hallmark other than that stretch that where there are all kinds of other factors that might have kind of sunk this team emotionally, but they've got that kind of scrappy core beating art that has been a hallmark of this franchise, you know, for a long, long time. You know, I think it goes back to Dwayne Casey. You know, it even predates Nick Nurse, but boy, the fact that they fight and they play hard, and they're not an easy night for anybody. You know, that's what Raptors basketball was, and they've got that back again.
Yeah, they have that back, and it was so interesting listening, you know, Jonas Valanciunas back in town just talking about how Fred has taken over Kyle's spot. That VanVleet, you know, the torch has fully been passed in terms of what that role was, what he meant to the franchise, what, you know, I don't know if Lowry was ever the face when Valanciunas was around. Maybe he was. But just in terms of what he means to this group. But now, I mean, look, the trade deadline is very much. We weren't quite sure, are the Raptors, you know, buyers, sellers back in the fall? It's amazing. They are the hottest team in the East, second hottest team in basketball after Memphis right now. And are they Milwaukee or Miami good? No. Are they in the Brooklyn conversation? Of course not. But the Toronto Raptors sit, I think, seventh in the East right now. And they could be in that 4-5 slot. You know, they could flip with Philly and Cleveland. They could surpass those guys real quick. Mm-hmm. To me, you know, there was a lot of talk about Nurkic in Portland, you know, and the Blazers being sellers. Steve, who knows when crowds are going to be back and how the revenue is going to be recouped. But if the Raptors are able to add and make a little bit of run in the spring, this can rejuvenate the city again. This can really change the dynamic in a town that's just been going through a lot of garbage for quite some time. And I wonder how much that weighs into the equation. Like MLSE, obviously their revenues have been decimated. But this could be a real opportunity because outside, and I know Chicago's on fire right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of the Bulls if this is sustainable. I don't. But I really think the Raptors can win a round or two with another piece.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like they could. Yeah, like it's so hard to, you know, that's let's see where they are and who they draw, because there are rounds they couldn't win, I think, you know, depending on where they fell.
It's so matchup driven. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's been such a, like, there are teams that, you know, we're not talking about at all that you would have assumed going into the season were going to be a factor. You would have thought the Knicks were going to be a factor. You would have thought Boston was going to be a factor. You would have thought Atlanta was going to be a factor, right? And they've, you know,
absolutely.
So the Raptors, you know, are ahead of all those teams that have, you know, had kind of disastrous seasons so far. You know, Chicago is a great surprise. Cleveland is an up and coming team, but they're a surprise. But yeah, I think, you know, if you tuck yourself in behind the big three in the East or the big four in the East, depending on how you think this is going to play out, you know, again, don't quite know what's going to happen with Philly. Do they ever make a Ben Simmons trade? Do they get something for him? And, you know, there's also the point in the year where teams start to get a little more serious about it and they start playing guys every night rather than resting guys. And there's a little more intensity. Like, they may not be quite as good as they look right now in terms of the standings, but they sure look like a playoff team. And I don't think there's a convincing argument to tear down and start over. And, you know, and again, I know that would only be partial in any case, but, you know, I don't think there's a convincing argument to dangle Pascal Siakam right now, for instance.
No.
Like, what?
No, I agree.
And that was, you know, that was something we were talking about and we have been talking about. I think you take your shot. Are you going to win a championship? No, I don't think so. But as you say, you could have a fun spring. You get in without having to go into a play-in tournament. And, you know, in a best of seven against a lot of teams, you got a shot. And this spring, look, I hope you're right. You know, I hope that them doing that, and, you know, the Leafs being a legitimate Stanley Cup contender and baseball getting its labor issues straightened out and the Blue Jays beginning a season as a legitimate World Series contender and life coming back to normal, I would take that right now on January the 10th, Arash. I would take all of those things. Like, let's starting at about the beginning of April, let's go. Let's do that instead of what we're doing right now.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. NBA trade deadline, by the way, 1 month from today. Steve, you mentioned Ben Simmons remains the biggest name on the market. But, you know, don't forget about Miles Turner now.
Mm-hmm.
In Indiana, he's got a deal that's not expiring. There's one more year left on that deal. You know, his name has been out there for quite some time. If you want to add some size, you know, the Raptors, obviously, the moves they made last year didn't work out. That is a huge, huge opening. I just think it'd be fun. And I think another piece or two, you know, a significant piece and then a little bit of window dressing would be significant to this team. So how about the Raptors? Winners of six in a row. Fred's on fire. Eastern Conference Player of the Week. Interesting stretch coming up. Phoenix tomorrow, the dreadful Pistons, and Dwayne Casey's and health and safety protocols. Hope Dwayne's okay. But then it's this road trip. Detroit, Milwaukee, then they go to Miami, Dallas, and Washington. So you're going to know a lot about what your team is over the next 10 days. All right, let's take the break. When we return, the Buffalo Bills are AFC East champions. Again, they get New England coming to town under the lights on Saturday. Tim Graham is a senior writer with The Athletic. He's covered the Bills forever. We'll talk about Josh Allen. We'll talk about Mac Jones, Bill Belichick, Sean McDermott. And we'll also talk about what is going on with the Bills Stadium situation. All of that when we're back on the Fan Drive Time. Quiet night in sports with the national championship going tonight with Alabama and Georgia. Leafs scheduled to go in Vegas tomorrow. Mitch Marner remains on the COVID list. The Raptors are at home to Phoenix before going on that five-game road trip. Arash Madani, Stephen Brunt with you all week and tonight until 7 o'clock. NFL playoffs await us this weekend. Six games, expanded playoffs, as we talked about before. In these six games, there are three number one overall draft picks at the quarterback position playing in this postseason, and it looks like Buffalo that made the investment in Josh Allen is paid off. The Bills are division champions again, AFC title winners back-to-back years. New England comes to town. Who else? Belichick versus McDermott again. Let's bring in Tim Graham, senior writer with The Athletic, who's been covering the Bills for years. How different was this one compared to last year? The novelty, the newness of last year, but no fans of last year, Tim. And now this year, having the hoopla at home and the coronation. How different is the feel about this Bills team compared to last?
Well, this year it was expected. And last year there was a lot of excitement. Every game down the home stretch was a party. Road games, win or lose, fans were meeting the team charter at the airport as though they had just won the Super Bowl. It turned into a thing down here, just as it just a little, you know, a lot of people rolled their eyes, but yet there were still hundreds of them out there. And, you know, there was a segment of fans, especially those who experienced those Super Bowl years, who would think to the younger generation, hey, let's maybe act like you've been here before, but they hadn't been there before. These fans had endured so much. And yes, they backed into the playoffs the one year. But last year was different. There was a dominance. There was a lot of entertainment value with Josh Allen emerging as the clear franchise quarterback. When heading into last year, there were still questions about him from the fan base as to whether or not he was legitimate and whether he could overcome his accuracy issues. So he proved that last year. Heading into the postseason, it was all very enthralling, captivating. This year, you could argue that it's a little disappointing because heading into this season, not just Bills fans, but a lot of the NFL analysts looked at the AFC East and said, if there's any lock in this game today, it's that the Bills are going to win the AFC East. And yes, they head into yesterday with an 85% chance of winning it, but there was still a chance the Patriots could win the division yesterday. And as of 3 weeks prior, it looked as though the Patriots were going to win the division. So week 18 in Orchard Park was supposed to be a game where you rested your starters and got the extra time to prepare for the first round. And probably fans were looking at first round bye because the number one seed, especially after beating Kansas City in October, it looked as though that the Bills were the Super Bowl contenders everyone hoped they would be. And now, so yesterday was a little bit of sigh of relief in the sense of they might miss the playoffs, but I think more a time to exhale. Okay, they're in. We know who the opponent's going to be. And now let's get ready on really short notice because not only is the game Saturday, but last night's game went so long in determining who the Bills' first-round opponent was going to be that it's almost like the Bills have lost a day and a half of preparation time for the Patriots. So I think partially the both teams are probably looking at it as, well, at least we played twice already this year. Right. So we have a pretty thick scouting report already.
So the expectation level, Tim, and again, not just I saw this morning that the Bills in this, you know, strange year, there's no super teams out there, but I think they're the fourth betting favorite in terms of the Super Bowl right now, which you wouldn't have said after the Jacksonville loss, or the Indy loss, or maybe, you know, even the loss to the Patriots in that first game. But, you know, the fact that they've kind of righted the ship at the end of the season here, and again, maybe not necessarily spectacularly this last weekend, but I would think that there's probably a quiet sense of confidence in that fan base right now, isn't there?
It's getting there. And I think that they've done what they've had to do over these last four, let's say four and a half games. They won their last four. And the second half against Tampa Bay, I mean, you could even take going up into halftime of that game, Tampa Bay was just thoroughly dominating Buffalo. And it looked as though this team was about to fall apart. Yes, they had just lost to the New England Patriots. So Bill Belichick gets them again. And now Tom Brady's doing it. You know, the guy leaves the division and he's still crushing our dreams. But the Bills rallied in the second half of that game. And really, you know, to be able to force overtime. And yes, they lost that game, but it was almost in the locker room afterwards, it was almost like a victory because it was a conference game. The loss didn't mean as much, but they showed a lot. By scoring as many points as they did, coming down, coming back from, you know, being down 24-3 at the half to force overtime 27. So four in a row, and prior to that stretch, the Bills hadn't won back-to-back games since Kansas City in October. So again, it was the only game that they had won over a team with a winning record, and it was their last time that they'd won back-to-back games. So you're forecasting ahead, like you say, through the Indianapolis, through the Tennessee loss, through the Indianapolis loss, through the Patriots loss, through the Buccaneers loss, and you're thinking, can this team win two games in a row, let alone four, if you're thinking about winning a Super Bowl? So what do they do here at the end of the season? They do win four in a row. They can show that they can string wins together, and that's exactly what you're going to have to do starting this week. You got to win four in a row if you want to be a Super Bowl team. And the thing that's interesting about the AFC, which, you know, you prefaced the comment, there is no dominant team. Somebody's going to have to win four games in a row. You know, there's no such thing as, you know, it won't end because no team's good enough. Somebody's going to hold the Lombardi Trophy up because they've won four games in a row. And the Bills look like they're as legitimate of a contender as anybody else right now. Yes, they ragdolled the Jets. They ragdolled the Falcons. That's what they're supposed to do. They ragdolled the Carolina Panthers. But that win in Foxborough in Week 16, a commanding performance, 33-21, and the Bills really didn't seem to be in doubt at all with two of their top three receivers out, with a juggled offensive line, with guys playing who hadn't played, whose healthy scratches, Tre'Davious White, their all-pro cornerback is gone, and the Patriots go into Foxborough the day after Christmas and just reasserted themselves again. So that is – they hit the reset button. And so all the doubts, they're still there, though. I mean, that's just a month and a half ago that everybody was given – let me really quickly say – the TV station that I work for down here, WIBB Channel 4, the CBS affiliate, they ran a poll after the loss to the Colts heading into the Thanksgiving game against the Saints, in which they asked Bills fans what they thought was going to happen. And the options were number one seed, win the AFC East, wild card team, don't make the playoffs. Over 80% of the people either voted for wild card team or not make the playoffs, with not making the playoffs getting the most at 47%.
That's a fatalistic fan base on the best of days, Tim.
Hey, that's what I'm dealing with, man. I mean, these are the people that are sitting in the stands. You know, those are the people that pay, you know. Yeah, you're right. They are cynical. They are fatalistic. But that's what you're surrounded with, and that's what the team has had to deal with in overcoming the culture. That's why, at least partially, for those 17 straight years of not making the playoffs, that the organization continually succumbed to, we don't deserve nice things. We're terrible. You know, there'd even be players during that streak that would tell me that, you know, they assumed that they were going to lose certain games because – they were used to it. It was in their fibers. And these would be captains, you know. Late game heroics would be met with, you know, stunned amazement in the locker room after the game. Like, well, we're just not used to that. I remember Thurman Thomas telling me after a game, in which the Bills had won. It was I don't recall the game in particular, but it was a late victory in which the Bills rallied. And he was in the locker room after the game, and he said, I thought for sure they were going to lose. You know, so these are the people that are around the organization. And so, fatalistic, but you're right. That fatalism sometimes gets between that helmet's ear holes on some of these guys. But they seem to have, at least the players, have at least been able to pull out of it.
Tim Graham's here, senior writer with The Athletic out of Buffalo. Tim, before we let you go, what is going on with the stadium situation? The Pegulas have said they want a new facility. I know that has been a major point of emphasis there. They actually want to recruit business clients from Toronto. They want to make that stadium a place to be, an attractive corporate environment. What is the latest with their stadium situation?
Slowly and quietly. I don't want to say slowly. It's quietly progressing. I'm not concerned about it from a, you know, if I were a Bills fan, I would not be, you know, worried about it. I wouldn't be worried about losing your team. What's so refreshing about this is somebody who's covered the NFL for as long as I have. And I used to cover the Miami Dolphins. I covered a sale. You know, I've covered, with different teams that I've been responsible for when I was at ESPN covering the AFC East. I've covered stadium issues. When I covered the Buffalo Sabres, I dealt with a team that was in bankruptcy, was sold a couple of times. What I am really, what's refreshing about this is that we haven't had any threats. You take a look back at any stadium issue in the NFL in particular, at some point very early in the process, the storyline of your team's going to move is floated. Mm-hmm. You're going to go to Los Angeles. You're going to go to Las Vegas. You're going to go to London. You're going to go to Toronto, whatever. Maybe the NFL's run out of cities to threaten. And Toronto,
I was wondering
doesn't
work about that
around here
is,
anymore.
Is there a lack of leverage? Could that be part of this?
Yeah. That is part of it, but it's also it was also bluffing before in so many terms, with the exception of St. Louis, and Stan Kroenke was going to move that team anyway. I don't think the Raiders wanted to move to Las Vegas in their heart of hearts. They wanted a deal, and Oakland kept kicking the can down the road to the point that it became a bad business decision to keep waiting around for Oakland. So there's a lot of bluffing that goes on in the NFL, and there's nothing to bluff right now, but that's actually been fine. I don't think that's hindered the deal. New York wants to make a deal. Erie County wants to make a deal. The Bills want to make a deal, and they're negotiating it. And I'm covering a story in which I don't have to talk to some politician in Alabama to say whether or not Birmingham is interested in stealing the Bills from Buffalo. So it's been, as I keep using the word, it's been refreshing. I think everything's coming along just fine, which how rare is that when it comes to sports and business?
Yeah, especially when you're talking about billion-dollar facilities looking for public money. Tim, appreciate it, man. Enjoy the week. Enjoy Saturday night. It should be a scene in that place.
Guys, thanks for having me on. Anytime.
Okay, there's Tim Graham, one of the senior writers with The Athletic, and as you heard, a contributor to the CBS affiliate.
Rash, I got to tell you, while we were talking there, I had a quick look at my weather app for Buffalo for this weekend. It's going to be cold, sunny, mm-hmm. not particularly windy. So I think the Patriots going to have to throw the ball more than three times. I don't think the strategy that Bill Belichick employed to win that first game is going to work this time. So it's, you know, all arrows are pointing the Bills' way here. And I know there are many things that, you know, could go haywire, but if you kind of look at what stretches out before them, again, I think Justin Herbert if it turns out to be relatively fast track in Buffalo would have been a very different challenge for that team. But you know, the wheels have kind of come off the Patriots since that win against the Bills. Mac Jones has been exposed a bit, and I know they put up 50 a couple of weeks ago, but that looks like
Jacksonville,
and it was Jacksonville. Jacksonville, who put Wentz India out of the, yeah, but this, you know, this is a pretty good match for them. I know you should never say that about a Belichick team, but it's not a bad way for them to start the playoffs at home. And again, if you're the Bills right now, who are you afraid of? Who are you afraid of in the AFC? You know, maybe the Titans, if Derrick Henry comes back and they can run it right down your throat. Mm-hmm. But
still
beyond
afraid
that,
of Patrick Mahomes. I'm still
always afraid of
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, but they did beat him earlier this year, and
sure,
I don't think these Chiefs are the Chiefs of 2 years ago either.
I agree with that. I just don't think October football matters that much right now. I mean, of course, it's a what have you done for me lately existence, but especially down the stretch of this regular season, New England's gone to the tank. They've lost three of their last four games. It feels like Mac Jones has hit a bit of a wall. And even when you go back to that Monday night game, that was an aberration. I mean, the weather was dreadful. You know, three pass attempts, as you mentioned, Steve. I'm not worried about New England at all as a threat in the AFC playoffs, period. Has nothing to do with the Bills. This has more to do with New England. The Patriots, to me, just aren't there yet. I'd be much more worried, as you mentioned, about Justin Herbert. The Raiders weren't going to be in the conversation, but I'd rather play, if I'm Buffalo, New England, the familiarity, all of those things, than a Raider team that's won four in a row and is playing really good football with a pass rush that's devastating.
Yes.
That to me is a big part of it. I also wanted to kind of dig into the stadium thing, because I find this very interesting. It has been, as Tim alluded to, it's been very amicable. Even last week, the governor of New York came out and said, We're making strides. We're on the right track. She joked that nobody in Western New York wants a dome, even when the weather is poor right now. It's been a very, you know, you think about what's happened in Calgary over the last 2-3 weeks, and then you think about what's going on in Western New York. But I wonder how much, from a Bill standpoint, this also has to do with the fact that there aren't many cities left to go. The relocations have happened. LA has two teams. Las Vegas has a team. You know, there are a lot of people who feel Jacksonville may be going to London before they go anywhere else. I don't know what other landing spots there may be.
No, it's a good question. I think the biggest factor is that the new governor of New York is a cheerleader for this, right? She's from Western New York, and, you know, she's put her cards on the table really early, essentially saying, you know, we're in. You know, there's no hardball being played on the public side of this. So that's, I think, the biggest factor, that she essentially conceded that, you know, that the state of New York is going to be a major contributor to this stadium, and that they want the team to stay there. So, you know, once you've got that kind of a rose-colored glasses sign-off from the most important politician in this discussion, I think it's pretty easy after that. But you're right. Like, there isn't an obvious place to threaten to go. You know, you can move to places like St. Louis, where they used to have teams. You could try and play the Toronto card again, but there's no, you know, real sense that a stadium could get built in Toronto. It's not realistic right now. I just think the fact that the most important political voice in this conversation sounds like, you know, a member of the Bills Mafia. Like, that's a pretty good place to start if you're the Pegulas.
Yeah, it's a huge one. And Toronto's not in the equation at all. Pre-COVID, you know, if you talk to people around the National Football League, they would have told you that outside of the concussion issue, there was no more of a hot-button topic within league headquarters and within league circles than an expansion into London and Mexico City. Now, that feels like it's been on the back burner, and I think COVID's a big part of that because of the travel and everything else that goes into it. So I don't know. What's the next city that's going to need a new facility? What do they have in terms of leverage to dangle? And that's been a big part of how teams have ended up getting public money. Public money of $500 million, $750 million, $1 billion. So that's good news for the people of Western New York. And I think there's something to be said for the fact that Roger Goodell is from the area, and Roger Goodell wants that franchise to stay there. I think that plays a part. You know, Roger Goodell grew up down the street from here. He wants the Bills to remain in the Buffalo area. and he'll push for this. And I think to have commissioner backing in a scenario like this is significant.
Yeah, look, I don't think at this point they're going anywhere for a bunch of reasons. Again, the most important one being the governor. But the other thing is, it's a good time to be lobbying for a new stadium when you're good. You know, if they'd been doing this lobbying during the Buddy Nix era, you know, it might not have been quite as happy a conversation about the owners and, you know, and how much they wanted them subsidized. You know, there were some pretty grim, dark days with this franchise. That's, you know, right now when you're winning, that's when you want to be dealing. You want to do it when everybody's blissed out. And I know that shouldn't matter in terms of the financial equation, but the fact is you can look at it over and over again. It helps. Well,
yeah, it's the reality.
Toronto Blue Jays got a stadium built for them in the 80s after they got good. That's just the truth of it. And there was a lot of momentum in the middle 80s to build that park, but that was that came after the Jays made their first postseason in 85 and were good all through the late 1980s. It was a much easier sell than it would have been if they'd been spinning their wheels in the middle 1990s.
Well, look, Indianapolis is a city whose population is bigger than Buffalo, but they're both small market teams with populations, their city is under 1 million. And the day Peyton Manning's statue was unveiled outside what is now Lucas Oil Field, on the grounds that once were the Hoosier Dome and the RCA Dome, Jim Irsay, the owner of the Colts, without skipping a beat, said, "That stadium behind us doesn't exist today without Peyton Manning." Mm-hmm. And I thought that was such an intriguing and revealing statement by the owner of the Indianapolis Colts, who, Steve, said exactly what you just pointed out. That without having a dominant franchise, without having a winning franchise, the appetite, the temperature, the desire, all those things to spend that kind of public money may not exist. And you wonder, yeah, what if it was the J.P. Losman, Trent Edwards era right now? What if it was the train wreck that it once was? How different is the vibe of this conversation? That's a part of this. The Rams leaving St. Louis, yes, they won in 2001, but they relocated more than a decade and a half after. And how dreadful were the Rams for a lot of those years after the greatest show on turf finished? The Chargers never won anything in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Yeah, their stadium deal was poor. The Raiders never won anything after John Madden. That all weighs into the conversation when you're asking the public to pony up that kind of money into any kind of facility. Fan Drive Time continues. Are we really a month away from the Beijing Olympic Games? The great Katrina Lemaidon is the chef de mission for Canada 2022. You remember her winning multiple gold medals in her speed skating career. What is happening there? Also, Novak Djokovic practiced in Melbourne today. Evander Kane, his contract was terminated last night. What's going on with those? We'll tell you about it on the Fan Drive Time.